Hi, this is Glenn Rawson. One of the most powerful ways to share history and heritage is by the telling of stories. We began sharing inspiring stories nearly 30 years ago. Each of those stories is true and was intended to inspire and strengthen faith. Over the years, those stories have reached millions around the world. This podcast is for you to listen, learn, and enjoy. As I've studied the accounts of those who did know the prophet Joseph, I have been so powerfully impressed again and again that Joseph Smith was unlike any other man of his time, both in calling, of course, but also in personal power. The numerous testimonies of individuals who met Joseph and described him in terms that I've never heard another man described. They are many, and they're compelling. This is one of them. It was February 18th, 1882, in Lehi, Utah, when Oliver Boardman Huntington penned the following recollection of the prophet Joseph Smith for the church periodical, The Young Women's Journal. He describes this event, Sunday, June 23rd, 1844. The prophet Joseph Smith, Hiram Smith, and others crossed the Mississippi River to the Iowa side with the intent to go west and find a home for their people. Now, you'll recognize that this is when Joseph went across the Mississippi in an effort to escape Carthage, where he was being summoned by arrest. According to the account of Oliver Huntington, Joseph and his party crossed over the Mississippi River and stopped at the home of Joseph Hancock. Joseph Smith explained to Brother Hancock where he was going and then asked Hancock to come along. Why? Because Hancock was a skilled hunter, and Joseph wanted him to come along on their long journey to provide game for the party. Oliver records the following from their conversation. Quote, Brother Hancock's horse was on the open prairie and could not be caught, only by several men on horseback driving it into a yard. I owned a lot of horses like that when I was a kid. The horses that you could never catch unless you went out into the pasture with a bucket of oats. Continuing, he replied to the prophet Joseph that he would go if he could catch his horse. The prophet said that if Hancock would go right after the horse, he could catch it. Brother Hancock, Oliver said, went out immediately and had no trouble walking up to the horse on the broad prairie, the first and only time he ever did. End of quote. This next story, again, is personal. I hope you don't mind. I have learned in my study of the scriptures that if I want Heavenly Father to bless me and answer my prayers, well, then I have to be merciful and a blessing and an answer to the prayers of others. The more I am a blessing and an answer to prayer to others, the more He'll take care of me. When my heart and my prayers are filled for others, He's more likely to hear and help me than if I'm just full of myself. Well, with this in mind, I prayed one morning, if there is someone I need to help today, please give me the opportunity. Not long after that, a day or two later, I had some late evening work to do at the office. This is when I was working on the Joseph Smith papers. I drove into downtown Salt Lake and pulled up in the parking lot across the street. As I pulled up in the parking lot, I noticed a nicely dressed young woman coming up the sidewalk towards where I was parked. She seemed to be in a hurry. In fact, she was running. That struck me as a little odd that time of night. As I was pulling into the parking place, I saw her suddenly pull up and start hopping on one leg. It looked like she'd hurt herself. Well, I parked my truck and looked down and turned off the key and looked back up. The girl was nowhere to be seen. I jumped out and found this young woman sprawled on the sidewalk directly in front of my pickup. She was curled up in a fetal position and crying. Well, to my discredit, I was instantly a little suspicious. A beautiful, lovely young woman, fashionably dressed, late at night, conveniently in distress, not 5 feet from where I was parked, downtown Salt Lake. Nevertheless, call me crazy, I approached and I called out to her. She didn't answer, but she just kept crying hysterically. I came to her and I bent down. When she perceived my presence, she recoiled and cried out, "Don't hurt me." "I'm not going to hurt you," I said, but she just kept saying it, "Don't hurt me," as she cried all the louder. Finally, I said, "What makes you think I'm going to hurt you?" "Because all men hurt me," she said. I stood up and looked around and wondered, what am I going to do? I couldn't bring myself to leave her there on the cold sidewalk in obvious pain in the middle of cold winter. But what if this was some kind of trap? Finally, I took her by the hand and I lifted her to her feet. As soon as she put weight on her ankle, she screamed and collapsed. I caught her before she fell to the sidewalk, and it was then that I smelled the alcohol on her breath. It was instantly clear. A lovely young woman, hopelessly drunk and injured on a dark, cold night far from home in a large city. Not knowing what else to do and not caring now about consequences, I carried her over to my pickup and lifted her inside. Sobbing and incoherent, I wrapped her up in a blanket and tried to calm her down. Finally, I managed to penetrate the stupor enough and calm her enough that she would give me the phone number of her sister. I placed the call and waited. She told me that she had been with her boyfriend and that they had broken up and she had run away. 13 blocks later, she ran into me. While we waited, she talked until finally she drifted into a fitful slumber. Soon, her sister and friends pulled up, and I lifted her out and placed her in the back seat. They drove off, and I went to work, wondering if I would later regret my act of compassion. I never did. I hope I still don't. I believe, and this is hard to say, I believe if we want to love people, we have to take them as they come. We're not called to judge, but to help. It has been my experience that the very ones placed in my path to help are most often the ones I least want to. And too many times, in the hardness of my heart, instead of succor, service, kindness, mercy, and compassion, I gave them scorn and passed by on the other side. I pray that I will learn not to judge on this side of the veil or the other, and that God will guide me to serve and lift every time I can. God bless you to take care of those around you to the best of your ability. Now, when visions and great revelations come to the president of the church, those are usually for all of us. When you and I personally receive great manifestations, visions, revelations, dreams, etc., we would do well to be very careful in sharing those things, lest we be thought a kook. When powerful revelations like the one I'm going to tell you now come to others and they share the story, what are we to do with that? When someone not in church authority has a great vision, revelation, or information, well, we listen and we learn and we discern, but we don't declare it as the doctrine of the church. It is for our benefit. With that in mind, let me share an experience from the diary of Anson Call. After the martyrdom of Joseph and Hiram Smith, their bodies were returned to Nauvoo and lay in state in the Mansion House for all to pay their last respects. Joseph and Hiram were martyred on Thursday, and funerals and lying in state through Sunday and Monday. Anson was among those who took his family and went to the viewing at the Mansion House. Upon returning home, Anson records this, quote, "Sleep and the desire for food had left my body. I shall not attempt to describe my feelings. What was to be done? I knew not. I cried mightily unto the Lord that I might know what to do." End of quote. On the third night after, Anson experienced a remarkable and instructive dream. He described it this way, quote, "I was traveling by myself in a lonely place till I came to a new field about 3 acres in size. I discovered in the center of the field a nice block house. I went to the door of the house. I discovered Joseph in the house standing in the middle of the floor. I sprang and clinched him by the hand. I threw my arms around him and kissed him and said, 'Joseph, I thought you was dead.' He said, 'I am.' I said, 'This is certainly Joseph.' He said, 'Yes, it is Joseph. Take your seat and I will tell you all about it.' I seated myself," Anson said, "and then discovered I was in a congregation of saints whom I was acquainted with. Joseph then said, 'Brethren, I have been killed in Carthage jail, and it will not make any difference with you if you do as you are told. I shall continue to govern and control this kingdom as I have hitherto done. The keys of this kingdom were committed to me. I hold them and shall continue to hold them, worlds without end. I am dead, and I am out of the power of my enemies. I am now where I can do you good. Be no longer troubled. Be faithful and diligent. Do as you are told, and you shall see the salvation of God.'" End of quote. Anson then said, "I then discovered myself sitting in the bed. I spoke to my wife and told her what I had seen and heard, and let her heart be comforted, for we should yet see good days and prevail over our enemies. I then commenced comforting my intimate brethren and told them what I had seen and heard. In a few days after this," Anson said, "I went to Carthage. I saw the stain upon the well curb of the blood that flowed from the prophet's veins. The jailer went with me through the jail. I saw the hole through the panel of the door that the bullet made that killed Hiram. The floor was yet stained with the blood. The jailer said it was impossible to erase it. I told him I wanted it to remain as an everlasting testimony against the murderers." End of quote. I felt that you needed to understand that story. Have you ever heard this? "It's my life, I'll do what I want." Or, "It's my body, I can do whatever I want." Have you heard that? Maybe, even perhaps, somewhere along the way, you might have actually said that yourself. Well, I ask you a question. Is it really just your life and your body? And you youngins, can we really do whatever we want with impunity? Well, this story is a perspective on that perspective. I remember when I was just a little boy, I grew up on a ranch in Hayden Creek Valley in the Lemhi Valley, central Idaho. I remember when I was just a boy, I came home from school one spring day there on Hayden Creek. And as was my habit, I called my dog, Stockings. He was waiting for me. And off we went to explore. Now, living on that ranch in that remote part of Idaho provided plenty of wilderness for that opportunity. And I loved to wander through the trees, along the creeks, over the hillsides. I loved it then, and I still do. Well, the problem on this particular day, I was about five or six years old. The problem on this particular day was that I lost track of time. When I realized it was getting dark, I was miles from home in my wandering. What's worse, I knew I couldn't make it back before it was too dark to see my way. And where I grew up, there was no such thing as streetlights or signs or even traffic. There was nobody. It was mountain country. I looked around me and saw that I was closer to a neighboring ranch farther up the mountain than I was to my own house. So I set out for their place, arriving just after dark. When I explained my situation to them and asked them to take me home, they didn't seem all that interested. They said they would, but they moved slower than cold molasses on a winter night. And it got later and later and darker. And I kept thinking, I'm in trouble. I am so dead. My dad is going to tan my hide. Time dragged on and my fear increased. It was a dark, moonless, cold night, and I was scared nearly in a panic. Then I looked down the mountain and I saw headlights coming up the rutted road. As the truck approached, it was my dad. I wasn't sure I was saved or dead, but the look on his face quickly gave me to understand that it was probably more the latter. He didn't yell at me. He just pointed back down the dark mountain road and said, "Start walking." I thought he had to be joking. He wasn't. Terrified, I walked a few hundred yards down that dark, lonely road, and then finally, overwhelmed, I sat down by the side of the road, wrapped my arms around my dog, and began to cry. My dad pulled up a few minutes later, threw open the door, and told me to get in. I climbed into the warm pickup, and he took me home. Strangely, my dad didn't say a word on that drive down the mountain. He didn't have to. I thought I knew what I had done wrong, but as it turned out, I had no clue. We walked into the house, and I still remember that. Going on 60 years ago, the lights were dim, and my mother was sitting in a front room chair right by the door, crying like I had never seen her cry. When she saw me walk through the door, she came up out of that chair with a sob and threw her arms around me and cried with relief. She thought her little boy had wandered off and fallen into the flooding creek, spring runoff behind the ranch, and drowned. I will never forget that night and the pain and worry on my mother's face. It cut so deep and hurt so much, I vowed never to do that again to my mother. I couldn't bear it. My dad quietly allowed me to learn that hurting my mother was one of the worst things I could ever, ever do. And I never forgot it. To this day, my mother and I are the best of friends. Now, I speak to all of you who have wandered. Do you have any idea of the worry and the pain that you are causing those who love you? Probably not, because if you did, you wouldn't do it. Come home. Come back to heart, home, and heaven. while you still can.
Thank you for listening. Many of the stories you heard today have been published and are archived at glennrossinstories.com. If you would like more information, you can communicate with us there. We will be back again with another podcast next week.